to you and welcome to hour number two of Better Lawns and Gardens, coming to you from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. We are here for you, and during the program a little later on, we'll be happy to take your calls at 1-888-455-2967 or 1-888-45-LAWNS. You can text us anytime at 23680. I overlooked how he said that they're listening to us at Peterson Nursery, and really appreciate that, and thank you for being there, Howie and Karen. We enjoy having you as one of our sponsors, that's for sure. I'm Tom McCubbin, of course, former University of Florida Extension agent, host emeritus of Better Lawns and Gardens, and very shortly we've been talking with Lance Walheim, author of Citrus, A Gardener's and Fruit Lover's Guide, brand new, nice revised edition, new edition, completely revised of his book, and I think it's really just one of the great ones out there. So really appreciate it. Had a lot of good information during hour number one. If you miss giving us a call or texting us, 23680, we'll be fine. Somebody said they missed Teresa's email address.
Okay, that is Teresa without an H. So it's Teresa dot Watkins at live.com. So that's Teresa dot Watkins at live.com.
Okay, so there you got it. If you'd like to send her a picture, somebody said they wanted to send her a picture she could take a look at. I'm sure she'd be happy to do that for you. Right now, I have the dirty word of the day, and the dirty word of the day for me is aphid. I have to tell you a story about aphids here. My daughter made a lettuce salad from our garden. When we sat down to eat, there were black specks moving throughout the lettuce. Yes, aphids kind of looked like little pieces of pepper there, didn't they? And we didn't eat the salad. They're so common, and I'm getting questions about them. Aphids are kind of pudgy little insects, and they come in green and yellow and black and all different kind of little colors. About a 1/16 of an inch or more or less in diameter at best. They come in, again, red and yellow and black. And if you look at them closely, I don't know how close you want to get to an aphid.
No.
But if you look at them closely, a little magnifying glass, they have what they call conicals on their behind.
Okay.
These are little projections, look like stovepipes.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's part of the breathing mechanism, air exchange.
Oh, okay.
But that's how you can tell they're aphids. What aphids do is suck juices from the plant portions. Normally, they feed in a tender new growth. As they feed, they emit excreta and plant sap. I see them in tops of flowers. I see them in viburnums, one of their favorite ones, when they get new growth on them. And like I said, they were in my lettuce that my daughter prepared for our salad. And the sooty, the excreta and the plant sap is a food for the sooty mold fungus. Aphids cause leaves to curl and flower buds to abort. They can spread diseases. We do have some help in controlling aphids. Normally, they're very clustered. You won't have any trouble seeing them in the terminal portions of the plants. Some beneficial insects, including ladybugs and lacebugs, feed on aphids, so they may give you some control. If the aphids are out of control, they can be washed off with a strong stream of water or a soapy solution if you want. Where I find aphids quite often is on my Hoya plants. And they'll be orange aphids. And you can just wash them off and rub them off, whatever it might be. Insecticidal soaps can give control, but you have to hit the aphids with the soaps to be effective. Other common insecticides for use on plants control aphids too. If you have an aphid infestation, I think you'll want to get it under control. Or you might, like me, watch them creep across your lettuce salad that your daughter made, little black ones. I think you missed that portion. We sat down for supper one time, and my daughter made the salad, and here are these little black specks creeping across the lettuce.
That is so sweet. Yeah, extra protein.
Yeah, she didn't wash it off. We didn't eat it also coming up. Anyway, so it's just some of the things that we have to deal with, I guess. I didn't do this during the first hour, and I wanted to do it. If you're interested in making a patriotic display for the 4th of July.
Yes.
And This is a question that came in. What are the good red and white and blue flowers for the planting? Well, if you want that display, 250th year, by the way, so it's kind of important that we all get together. I'm not hearing as much about it as I thought we might. I hear it in ads for products. But we display the patriotic colors this summer and the rest of the season with annuals and perennials. Some good reds are found among the begonias, the pentas, New Guinea impatiens, and salvias. My salvias right now are beautiful, and they've been flowering along, so it's a good one for us. The red salvias, the annual salvias. The whites that are available, you can select Angelonia. Again, pentas. There's some white salvias, and there's some periwinkle flowers that are white, so you could use them. The blue is the hardest to find. If you're interested in blues, you can find them available with Tarina, Blue Days, and they're both good. The Blue Days has done amazingly well. We've gotten new varieties that's very tolerant. So if you're interested in something like that, either the Tarina or the Blue Days would work out well for you. And they'll overhang the planters, which is kind of nice. All these should be available at your garden center throughout the summer. But if you want it for the 4th of July, you want to get things fired up, now would be the time to do that. So I suggest you go out and make that patriotic garden red, white, and blue. Of course, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens here at Summit Responsible Solutions. Coming up during the next hour, we'll have Lance Walheim, author of Citrus, A Gardener's and Fruit Lover's Guide. It's brand new. It's really neat. I'm Tom McCubbin, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Thank you for joining us today here at Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Tom McCubbin, your host, Extension Agent Emeritus with the University of Florida. And Teresa's off today, but we are here, and we're happy to have you. A little bit later on, we'll be happy to take your calls here at 1-888-45-LAWNS or 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text us at any time at 23680. I do want to tell you that you can't send us pictures here, but you can send them, can't text pictures. You can send them to Teresa. We've given out her address there, and we'd be happy to, I'm sure she'd be happy to look at them and take a look at them. Right now, please join me in welcoming my good friend Lance Walheim, the longtime great friend of Joni and me, plus a TV and radio personality, speaker, company representative, author of over 30 books, including Roses and Lawns for Dummies, plus editor of Sunset Western Garden Book, and now author of a revised Citrus, A Gardener and Fruit Lover's Guide. Lance, good morning to you.
Hey, Tom. It's good to hear your voice. It's been a while.
It's good to hear your voice, too. It has been a long time. How's the weather out there in Oregon?
Well, it's sunny and warm, actually. And then Monday and Tuesday, we're supposed to get up into the 90s. So
really?
Almost to 100, yeah.
Wow.
It's cold for a couple days or cool anyway. Then it's hot. We never know what we're going to get here.
You might as well be living in Florida.
Yeah.
I remember when you came to Florida and you did some neat things. You even controlled the weeds in our walkway. Joni appreciated that.
Yeah, I'll bet she did. We had fun.
We did have fun. Hey, you have a wonderful new book, Citrus, A Gardener's and Fruit Lover's Guide. It's a lot of time you put into this book. And you've got.
Yeah, I originally thought it was going to take me about 6 months to revise and update the book, which was 30 years old, the original. It ended up taking me 2.5 years, but wow. It was a lot of fun. So much has changed in the citrus industry, and so much has changed in the publishing industry. I self-published a book, and it's really a whole new book. It's got twice the pages, three times the color photography, and dozens of new varieties. It's been a labor of love. Citrus has been a big part of my whole life, and I enjoyed working with it and all the people that are in the citrus industry.
Yeah, you've been growing citrus for over 50 years. I mean, that's a long time. Can't believe you're that old. Can you?
Yeah, I can't believe it either, but every time I get up in the morning, I believe it.
Yeah,
especially at this time.
Yeah.
But
We have to tell everybody you have to get up 3 hours earlier to be with us here at 8 o'clock on the eastern portion of the United States. Hey, it's a beautiful.
I get up for the early hour too. So,
do you normally get up at that time just to be up?
No, I get up to listen to the early hour of your show.
Oh, okay. You did get up early then, that's for sure. Yeah, well, I'd love the photos also. You did, obviously, a lot of research. I mean, you can contact researchers, extension agents throughout the country where we grow citrus. And I didn't realize there was so many different citrus fruit varieties. You have lots of new pictures and fruit varieties there. It's really neat.
Yeah, in the last 30 years, when we had our 35-acre ranch in Exeter, California, we grew a lot of the new and unusual things, and a lot of them have gradually moved into the normal commerce and have become important commercial varieties. But, yeah, we've got well over 100 varieties described, and the citrus family is such a huge family of fruit. I think at the UC Riverside Field Station, they've got over 500 varieties there. So there's a lot to see and a lot to taste.
What does the future of citrus look like? I mean, you've been a grower. You've been growing them for 50 years or interested in them for 50 years. What does it look like right now?
Well, you know, I got to be honest, I'm more optimistic than I was 10 years ago. I mean, it's been a rough couple decades. Look where we are now. Florida's citrus commercial production is down 90% from what it was 20 years ago. And, I mean, tens of thousands of gardeners have lost their trees. But honestly, I'm optimistic. There millions and millions of dollars are being spent to fight citrus greening in the psyllid. The best minds are working on it, and there's some things to be excited about. So I'm not giving up, that's for sure. I know a lot of gardeners, you know, really have been frustrated losing their trees. When you had a couple trees that you lost.
Yeah, I lost in the greening, and my neighbor has restarted with one of the lemons. I'm going to put something back in also, but it's about time. I've got this whole list of the resistant varieties. And I'm thinking about either Sugar Bell or maybe Marathon, one of those that I could put them in a container maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, keeping them in a container is a good idea because you'll be able to keep the trees smaller and, you know, they'll be easier to spray. You just got to keep up on that nutrient regime. But, yeah, you know, there's a whole bunch of new varieties coming out, and there's more on the way. I don't know if you remember the Oro Blancos that I sent you years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the University of Florida's got a new grapefruit hybrid. It's, you know, it takes years to develop enough of a supply for these new varieties to really make them available to the home gardeners. So we're going to have to be patient, but they've got a new red grapefruit pomelo hybrid that really looks good. So there's even better things coming down the road, I think.
Yeah, so I guess what you're saying is, you know, a lot of residents have stopped growing citrus, but they should start again.
I think so. You know, my favorite website from the University of Florida is called Citrus in the Home Landscape Initiative. And they just have all the tips that we've learned from all these years since 2005. And there's a lot of great things there people can do to make sure they have the best chance of succeeding. I mean, it's not going to be easy, and we aren't out of the woods yet, but it's looking a lot more positive than it has in a while.
Yeah, Matt Smith, extension agent, who I talked with about citrus varieties and greening and everything, you know, he gave me this list here, and it looks it's a long list. It really is. And he emphasizes that the citrus is tolerant and not necessarily resistant, totally resistant.
That's right. And what that basically means is that the tree can get greening, but it will still produce a reasonable crop. So they are not resistant. And, you know, another thing that I didn't hear mentioned is the Australian finger limes. Now, they're showing what they call a high tolerance. And
yes.
The researchers are looking at the genetics of that to possibly incorporate into other varieties. But if you like the finger lime, which is that you know, citrus caviar that you squeeze out, and then you can put it on sushi and in salads and stuff. That's another one we're taking a look at.
They have UF sun lime, which is a finger lime. And that, that one there, they say it's the closest to greening resistant, which is good. We're talking with Lance Wahlheim, author of the revised edition of Citrus, A Gardener's and Fruit Lover's Guide. If you don't have it and you want to grow citrus, you're growing citrus, you got to have it. It's the best book that I have seen, Lance. This is complete. It really is good for the home. I'm not sure it's not the best one for the commercial producer, too.
Yeah, I hope the commercial guys will find it useful. We tried to get a lot of information. I mean, it's directed at home gardeners mostly, but the variety information is very complete. You know, a lot of people say, well, why are you doing a book on citrus with the greening and stuff? And there's so much available information online. And so what we decided to do is put in references of where all the information comes from in terms of giving them search, you know, what to search so that they can get to the original information and get more detail, because these varieties and the situations, the quarantines, everything's changing so fast. So you need to be able to, you know, use your computer to get up to date and you do your homework.
And find out where you can get the varieties in Florida also. And that's easy enough to do. And it's taking time for them to get them on the market, that's for sure. So if, you know, with the Asian psyllid out there, greening so common, I guess we should only select tolerant varieties, right? I mean, don't go back to the old varieties.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good place to start. That's for sure. I know that a lot of people want to stick with some of their favorite varieties, like the honeybell mandarin or whatever. But, and you know, some of the smaller trees, like the seedless kishu, which is easy to protect and easy to spray, it's not going to be easy, but I wouldn't give up on all those great old varieties. I kind of did a deep dive just to see how much people are growing some of those older varieties, and there's a lot of them still trying them. You know, people trying the blood oranges and the Caracara navels and the seedless kishus. There's a lot to try out there, but I mean, we have to be real about what's going on in the state right now. So using some of the tolerant varieties is a great place to start.
Yeah, I don't think I'd take a chance. If I was putting in citrus, I wouldn't go with the old navels or Hamelins or any of those. Go with the newer varieties.
Yeah, that's right. Unless you're ready to, and you know, some of the people, especially up in the northern areas, they still got some older trees. And so, you know, they need to go to the information that they need to protect them.
Yeah. We're going to run out of time here, Lance, very quickly. So what can we do now to prevent greening?
What can we do now to prevent greening?
Yeah.
Well, there are a number of things. You know, a lot of growers are using protective covers. You want to make sure that you're fertilized aggressively, including micronutrients. You know, get the University of Florida recommendations. You want to make sure that you're using control methods to, you know, keep the insecticides used to control the psyllids. There's a number of organic ones. Unfortunately, they got to be used often. And there's also the systemic products, which are not, you know, they're not, you know, surefire. They're not magic bullets, I guess is the word I want to use. You know, they only last 3 months. You can't use them on containers, but it is still one of the most valuable tools that we have. Provide consistent moisture. Root growth slows down when the trees get greening. So in the sandy soils of Florida, you want to make sure you're providing consistent moisture. That's very important. Then there's people using reflective mulches. You want to encourage and release beneficial insects. That's a great idea. You know, plant things that attract beneficial insects. That'll help control the psyllids.
Yeah, Lance.
So those are some of the things you can do.
Your book is so complete. How do we get a copy?
You can go to wahlheimpress.com, but they're also available on all the usual places online. But wahlheimpress.com, you'll get a little bit of discount, so I'll appreciate you going there.
Lance, thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us. That's Lance Wahlheim.
I appreciate being on.
Okay, thank you, sir. You have a great time out there in Oregon. Glad you got up to listen to the first hour of the program also.
Oh, yes.
Lance Wahlheim, longtime friend of Joni and me, radio personality, plus now the author of this Citrus, A Gardener and Fruit Lover's Guide. It's just a terrific book. I mean, you just got to get a copy. You got to look at it. And it has information for across the country, all the different varieties. It's just amazing. Well, we got the next portion of the program, last half hour coming up here. Why don't you give us a call, 1-888-45-LAWNS, 1-888-455-2967, and you can text us at 23680. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. And welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. Happy to have you with us today, that's for sure. We are in the final half hour, believe it or not. Time just is zipping on by. And we'd love to have your call. If you have a question for us, you can call Lizzie. She's waiting for your call at 1-888-45-LAWNS or 1-888-455-2967. Some people say I say it too fast, so we'll do it one more time. 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text me at 23680. 23680. Love to have your text message also. And we'll get you up on the program with us and things that we can talk about. I have a whole list of things to do. But first, let's go to Rico in Valkyria. Rico, good morning to you. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to hear yours, Tom. I've got a couple of questions. And the first one is, is it too late for tomatoes? My chickens got out of their pen and ate all my little tomatoes back in, I think it was March. So I started new ones, and they're just now starting to flower.
Okay, it's not too late, but the problem is they're probably not going to fruit very well until we get into the fall. Now, if they're cherry tomatoes, you'll probably get fruit. You'll get some fruits. But if they're regular slicers, probably just going to grow a lot of vines. And I'll be starting my tomato seeds in the middle of July, which is coming up very quickly here. And then I'll be putting the transplants out in the garden in August so that I will get good-sized plants and flowering during late September, early October. But, you know, you can probably go ahead and get some production out of them.
Well, I'm going to spray them with that that stuff that triggers the fruiting on the flowers, whatever. I can't remember what it's called. But anyway, that was my first question. My second question is, do you think I'll get any mangoes next year?
Okay. How far back were your trees frozen?
Pretty bad. You know, pretty I'm bad. In Valkyria, which is just south of Bombay and Melbourne.
I know.
And they survived. And the small ones, I banked hay around the trunk up above the graft. Hay comes in layers, so I took a layer and wrapped it around the trunk. They all survived. The stuff that I forgot to protect, it's toast.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, you anyway, know, my guess is you've got 2 years. Probably
2 years.
Yeah, probably not going to get anything next year unless the trees that you're able to save were, you know, pretty large trees. There's a possibility, but
Well, one of them's 40 years old. Most of them are teenagers or maybe a little better. You know, they're good. The big one's got probably a 16-inch trunk. So
yeah, but how much
it survived nicely? And there's plenty of growth all up in the canopy. But
okay, well, I think you got a chance there. That if the new growth matures in time,
that one.
You might get some.
Well,
that
was about it. It's nice to hear you on the radio, even if it's just for a 1 weekend.
Okay, well, I'll be
now,
back.
By the way, are you doing any speaking engagements?
You know, I pretty much gave up on the speaking engagements. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
We loved you when we had you here at the
Tropical
Fruit Club in Melbourne. We loved you at that, but we're hoping we could get you back.
Well, thank you, but I think I'm pretty much giving up on the speaking engagements, but thanks for asking.
Tired, huh?
Okay, Rico, take care. Let's go to Jerry in Citrus County. Jerry, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tom.
Yeah, good morning.
I got questions on the cranberry hibiscus and the Roselle.
Okay, sure, Roselle, yep.
The Roselle seems to be quite nice, but it takes quite a while to grow it out.
Right.
Does it keep over the freeze or a winter or anything, or is it an annual?
They're going to freeze. You can keep them over, but most of the time we grow it as an annual.
Annual, okay. And the cranberry hibiscus, I got a variety that some people call it October Rose, or they got other names too. But it has a large purple flower that cycles flowering, you know, almost daily.
Mm-hmm.
Closes, and it's good for tea, I guess. And it's does it cross? I'm starting to get some of last year's growth. I got like 100 plants came up.
Wow.
And they seem to have differences.
Oh, yeah. You might get some mutations, some changes, maybe some cross-pollination possibly. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Are there other name varieties?
I do not know. Yeah, I do not know of other name varieties, possibly. It's not one that I've really followed along, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay. Well, I appreciate your help. And I continue to grow the Roselle, but I don't get the production that I need from, like, the cranberry one.
Yeah. I see. Okay. Okay. Now, well, at least you're doing it, that's for sure. Jerry, thanks for the call. Okay. Let's talk to Bill in Georgetown. Bill, good morning to you.
Morning, Tom. Really nice to talk with you again, even if it's just for a short minute.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, too. How's everything going?
Well, okay. I'm trying to live your philosophy. You told me the last time I talked with you to stay busy, but, you know, it gets tough. And I'm not gardening like I used to, but I've got one experiment going right now. One of these seedless watermelons, there was a seed in it. And I know I'm not going to get a seedless watermelon, but I planted it. And I'm going to try to do what I did in Mount Dora, was hang it and had watermelons that were hanging off the fence. And I thought that was pretty neat. I'm going to try that again.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. Yeah, so you growing anything else besides watermelons?
I still grew my Cherokee purple tomato. And I know we always had a difference on cherry tomatoes. I like the wild cherry. They get a lot of flavor. That's the name of it, the wild cherry.
Yeah.
And I grow them, and instead of growing the big tomatoes, because these cherry tomatoes have so much flavor, and I put them in like scrambled eggs or even a turkey sandwich, and they're delicious. And you grow them all summer. That's the nice part about it.
Yeah, I saw Lizzie kind of wince here when you said turkey sandwich.
That sounds good. Oh, we'll have to get together and trade.
That's what I always appreciate when I call in, because I'd get you guys laughing, and I really appreciated that.
Thank you for that.
I'm sorry, you're still dealing with the ignoramus that you always did. I don't have a computer, so I can't communicate with you unless it's snail mail, and I don't want to bother you with that. So I just wanted to call in and say it's nice to talk with you, and maybe I'll call in July.
Okay, Bill, thanks for calling. We appreciate it very much. And Bill's been a longtime listener over the years and a good friend of Joni and me. And he came to some of our programs and things like that, which was really kind of nice. Kind of neat. Anyways, break time. And you still have time to give us a call. William in Melbourne, hang on there. We're going to give you some container garden suggestions coming up here. And you can call, too. It's 1-888-455-2967. That's 1-888-455-2967, or you can text us 23680. You better get that text message in quickly, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. This is Florida's Talk Entertainment Network. And welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. Happy to have you with us. I'm Tom McCubbin, of course. I just want to remind you of Leis Waldheim's great book, Citrus, A Gardener's and Fruit Lover's Guide. It's just really a terrific book, and I appreciated Lance being with us and giving us information and encouragement to start planting citrus again. I think if I plant citrus, it's going to be in a container, and I've got the perfect spot, a couple of spots, actually, where I'd like to have them, and it's going to be one of the resistant varieties. If you want to know the resistant varieties, get up online, do a search, and just go the citrus, greening tolerant citrus varieties. I think that's the way to do it. You can search it out. You can find all the new citrus greening tolerant varieties. Plus, you can find out where to get them. The university has a list there. It's called Selecting a Citrus, and it has the varieties that you may want to grow. Be kind of neat. Let's go to William in Melbourne. William, thanks for holding on. We appreciate it. How can we help you today?
Good morning. Yes, this is William Howland. I'm looking for some low-maintenance garden. I'm interested in hydroponics. I got a small back deck, and I want to know if I could do 5-gallon buckets out there and set up a hydroponic something, because I'm blind, and okay. I need help.
Sure. Well, you know, they've grown hydroponic type situations in 5-gallon buckets. There was a technique at one time developed where they put mulch in the container, and the container would have mortar in the bottom of it, and the plant roots would grow down through the mulch into the water, and that would work out. Other people have little pond-like structures and float styrofoam in it, and plant hydroponic things like lettuce and herbs and that. So you have all different kind of opportunities, and you could just grow plants in water. I mean, that's a possibility also. So there are things that you could do. But there would be the lower-growing plants, probably things like herbs, which is good. You have the lettuce-type varieties, maybe even strawberries when strawberry season's in. What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking more like eggplants, tomatoes, and peppers.
Okay. Well, you know, I think for what you want, why don't you get something like Earthbox or, you know, containers that you put soil in, and you just have to make sure you keep moist. But earth boxes, for instance, are self-watering. You just have to keep track of the water, and you can feel that, of course. And then you can grow your tomatoes. You can grow your I would grow the lower-growing varieties, bush tomatoes. You can still grow peppers. I love peppers. You heard Lizzie talk about her hot peppers. And so that's what I'd do. I think something like that's going to work better.
I'd start that in what, August, September?
August, mid-August, September, yes.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, William, good luck to you. We appreciate it, and I hope it helps out a little bit. Earth boxes have worked out well, and you can just go ahead and they're self-watering. Just make sure you keep track of the water, and it should work out pretty well. Speaking of things to grow coming up here, I brought July calendar along. It's going to be printed in the paper, I think, next week. And some of the vegetables that you can still grow, you can grow them during June also. Things like calabasa, cherry tomatoes, okra, Seminole pumpkins, roselli. You heard Rico. Well, I don't think it was Rico. I forget who it was talking about roselli. Sweet potatoes still. And then we start our transplants of the eggplant, the peppers, and tomatoes. You start all those from seed, and I think that should work out pretty well for you. Some of the flowers, besides the ones for the 4th of July, things like ageratum, the bush daisy, which was one of my top shrubby-type plants. We have cat's whiskers, coleus. I have grown lots of coleus this year. Started them from seed, and they are doing so well, and I have them on one side of the house. It's kind of hot, and I have to go out during the day and kind of mist them. But when the rains come, then the coleus do just fine. They perk up, and they're looking good. So in the shade, you can always grow coleus, but nice new ones there. Have things like ginger, impatiens, Joseph's coat. I'm trying to get people interested in Joseph's coat.
Okay.
It's a... Well, biblically, remember, the coat of many colors.
Yes.
But that's what it looks like. Another name for it is Alternanthera. Alternanthera. Most people are not going to remember that. Remember Joseph's coat. You can look it up. And you have ones that are purple-leaved. You have ones that are mixed colors, the reds and pinks and white together. I have one like that. I have the purple one. But I want to get some more. And they're pretty tough. They're pretty tough.
Where would you suggest planting them? Full sun?
Full sun's fine.
Okay.
Full sun to light filtered sun.
Okay.
One or the other.
And then, like, how much watering are we expected here with that?
Typical annual. Okay. So pretty much if it's in a container daily. If it's in the ground, probably every couple of days. Once they get established, that's the important part to it there. Other ones I have, lantana, melopodium. A lot of people don't know melopodium, pretty yellow type of flower. And we also have, moonflower. My moonflowers are flowering right now. I love moonflowers. Some people say they're a bit invasive. They're native, evidently, of South Florida. And so mine are flowering. pentas, really neat, purslane, salvias, sunflowers. My sunflowers just finished flowering. I'll plant some more tarinas and the classic zinnias, and I'll be planting more zinnias, that's for sure, too. Okay, here are a couple of things that, well, let's see. I got a question here that I wanted to answer. It says, the question was, we protected our pineapples grown in containers. That's how they protect them from the cold. If they were in the cold, they probably froze back. And said, they're now growing large fruits. When will they be ready to harvest? Most pineapple fruits are ready to harvest 5 months after the fruit first started forming. So most of them will flower in March, and then about middle August is when they start changing color. The pineapple fruit is ready to harvest when it turns from a green to light green to orange color. Some pineapples don't really turn a total orange color. They turn kind of a yellowish green, so it's possible. And the deeper the color, the sweeter the fruit. And like I said, many of the protected plants flowered in March, and they'll be ready in August. Now, here's the problem. The problem is you're not the only one interested in those pineapple fruits. Okay, there's a lot of critters out there, and I'll tell you the story. I was had this pineapple. The pineapple looked like it was getting ripe. It was turning orange, and I said, one more day, Tom. Give it one more day. So the next morning I got up, and it was beautiful orange on the one side and half-eaten on the other side. So some critter got it. So if you have pineapples and you think you have critters, squirrels, rats, what have you in your area, you're going to have to protect it from the cold, I mean, from the critters, just like you did from the cold, so that you get to eat it.
What is out here just eating pineapples? Because you got to get past their what do you call it, the leaves?
Spiny leaves?
Yes. That is I didn't realize that they had, like, saw teeth on them until...
Yeah, some do. Some don't. Not all of them.
Oof. Yeah. I got caught up in a couple of them.
Yeah, you got the ones that have the spiny edges on them. Yeah.
Facts.
But some of them are smooth-edged. But I'll tell you what, the critters get them, no doubt about it. They mm-hmm. climb up there, and I've learned the hard way, so I don't know. Here's another question I have. Should I wait for the new growth to appear on the Norfolk Island pine? Does that mean I shouldn't cut the brown branches off? I talked about Norfolk Island pine, various degrees of recovery of Norfolk Island pines out there. If you have the brown on there, you want to cut those brown branches off, that's fine. Check to see if there's some nice new green coming on your plants there. That would be a good one also. A lot of cold questions. Okay, let's see.
Okay, so we have heard experts say that the black cow manure mix has changed over the years. Let's see, black cow makes your dirt turn to clay. This is Mark from D-Land. Have you experienced that? Or
I have not. No, black cow hadn't changed as far as I know. That looks like...
Now, I know that they've come out with a couple new products
yeah.
So, which I was really impressed with, so that they came out with that. But yeah, I haven't experienced that clay type of... maybe it's one of their newer products is maybe set for something like that.
Yeah, I think the standard black cow is still regular black cow.
Yeah, give them a call. Yeah. You can easily look up their number and give them a call and maybe ask them that question.
Or go up online. They have they're up online also.
Yes, yeah, so Linda in Zone 8B says, what size pot will you have for citrus trees?
Citrus trees, I'm going to go up to probably a 30-gallon to maybe as big as a 50-gallon even. I want something big that I can have in the landscape. Probably 30 gallons easier to handle than if you go higher in that. But the bigger the container, the better. That's good.
Okay, and then Ken from Northwest Orlando, my Bismarck palm is suffering from a freeze. We have trimmed two layers of the palms, and it looks like more need to be trimmed. Anything I could do? This is his favorite. It was a gift from his mother 14 years ago, and it's 30 feet high.
Trim off anything is dead. That's the main thing. Hopefully there's nice new growth at the top. Yeah, somewhere. You got those messages. I did not get them on mine.
I'm special.
You are. No doubt about that. Yeah. I appreciate it. Lizzie, thank you very much for everything.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you to our listeners.
We had a good program, that's for sure. I want to thank Lance Waldheim again, author of Citrus, A Gardener and Fruit Lover's Guide, for joining us. Also, if your local station doesn't broadcast, just give us a call. And please remember to visit with our sponsors, Black Cow, Summit Responsible Solutions, Quality Green Specialist with Dana Venerick and DeLay. And remember, they will be getting the tolerant varieties in. They're sold out right now. Peterson's Nursery with Hallie and Karen in Lakeland. And let them know you appreciate them, and we certainly appreciate them being here. And Lizzie, again, thank you for everything.
Thank you.
To you from the Summit Responsible Solutions, maker of organic mosquito bits and dunks, Summit year-round spray all, Summit Green Armor insect repellent. I'm Tom McCubbin. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens.